Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
The disgusting display.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. Today, we're going to be talking to Scott Grimes at long last.
Yes.
We are excited to talk to him. He's a local. He's a Boston legend. So we'll talk to him about that and Oppenheimer and the TED show and everything. Really good guy. Goldie, we were texting this week and you intimated to me that you have a, you may have a special power.
Yeah, I discovered this. So obviously I've got the two kids and I go to a lot of kid events. I go to games and theater.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Theater. Yes. And parties. I'm around a lot of children. And
yes.
So I discovered this thing and I don't like it about myself, but it exists. So I can tell if a kid is going to go bald.
Wait, what?
Like I just know.
How is
it's 100%. It's like I can see the future. I'm really not myself while I'm doing it. It's sort
out of body.
Well, if something is speaking through me, like I'm the vehicle, but I'm not creating the thought.
First joke of the day. First joke of the day.
But I'm able to know with 100% assurance if a kid is going to go bald in the future, whether it's, 20 years or what. And so.
And how old are the kids when you're looking at them? At what age?
8.
Oh, wow.
6. And then, particularly if they're 13, I mean, it's so clear. And so then you kind of have this thought, like, do I have a duty to warn them?
Yeah.
Should I tell the parents? And I think it's almost a thing I need to bring before a medical ethics board because, they have these early detection now for Alzheimer's and they wonder, does the person want to know?
You're right.
So they can prepare for the future or, by knowing, do you sort of manifest it because you then think it's preordained? And of course, nothing is preordained. But
I love this power.
Yes.
I don't know. Like I'm thinking of trying I don't know if you've given any thought to this, but maybe there's something like a 529 plan where you can put money away for either, a hair transplant or escorts or I don't know what the money would be for.
What are some of the markers? Do you know, or do you just know? Are you just
thinking while this is happening?
It comes
to me in a flash. I see a flash of the future. I see the child as an adult, and I say they're bald. 100%.
I love this,
and it's in a way, it's a curse.
Yeah,
and anyone who sees the future at all will tell you it's a curse. Is it a blessing? I mean,
it is.
Sure.
It's a curse and a blessing. And I think maybe now this is millions. Where we just get started on this podcast, Goldie's Kids.
And just, well, I want to use it for good. This
we start putting together a fund for Goldie's kids.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's sort of depressing.
Oh God, Goldie's little bald eagles. What do we call them? Something.
I don't know, and because they don't know, like they don't know what's going to happen to them, which is what makes it so kind of both touching and sad.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Pre-counseling.
I love this superpower. I mean, it's a perfect superpower for you because it does you nothing. Like you gain nothing.
Well, that's the thing. If I were to approach a parent and tell them and they would get angry, I would say, well, what am I getting out of this? Do you think? Yeah. You think I have a scam or an angle from this? Have I asked you for anything? Do you think I want to be doing this? This is the conversation I like having. Oh, how I want to be interacting with people in the world.
This is like your dead zone. It's the bald zone. In the dead zone, the guy can see how people are going to die. You can just see if people are going to be bald. Right. I love that.
I think the ultimate use of it would, there was a story about a doctor and he was approached by a woman who said, you know, both of my parents died of heart attacks at 32 and my grandparents all died of heart attacks in their early 30s. What should I eat? And the doctor said, you should eat anything you want.
Oh, there you go.
Meaning, wow.
Yeah, you know, it's over.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to have a heart attack.
Over.
And so I just want to
live your life.
Like maybe these kids, we make everything that the rules are 18 and 21 for them. If we lower it to like 14.
Yes,
because they're gonna go bald, and then this world of sex and partying will not be available to them.
Right.
So maybe they should be able to vote, and they should be able to get their driver's license and whatever. Like we should just up their
drink.
Yeah. What we say their biological ages, lower so that they can then have these experiences reserved for older kids. Because when they're older, it's gone. They can't have them.
Right.
Oh, God, I love
it. It's not
this.
A bad idea.
Thank you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You know, I realized it when you were talking that I too have a mild superpower.
Oh, yeah.
And my superpower is that I can see 3 minutes into the future and I know that I'm going to be terrible at Johnny jokes.
Oh, whoa, from Hollywood. Here's Johnny.
Oh boy. Okay. I don't know what we got this week, but I've seen into the future. Here we go. A former Jacksonville Jaguars employee who stole over $22 million from the franchise will serve 7 years in prison. No word yet on when Urban Meyer will start his sentence. Not a good coach down there. Stole some money. Or maybe you heard about this. Lily Allen stated in a recent interview that having children ruined her career. Mm. And I have to agree because I have no idea who that is.
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I read the story. Okay. Maybe you heard about this too. After a closed door meeting, former Vice President Mike Pence said that he could not endorse Donald Trump for president. Oh, boy. I'd love to have been a fly on the head for that guy. And finally, for me, this one that might be a thinker and a stinker. Well, after over 80 years in business, Joanne Fabrics has filed for bankruptcy. And while this is sad news for moms, it's great news for 11-year-old sons who just happened to be in the car.
Listen, bad. Fly on the head is
yeah, I should have,
that's what we're going to remember this.
I should have closed with that. That was clearly. A great joke. See, I told you, I saw into the future. All right, Johnny too.
Scientists.
Ooh.
Science.
I saw you perk up there. Scientists have discovered a 4,000-year-old stone vial full of lipstick.
Ooh.
It was at the bottom of your mom's purse.
Good.
Well, sad news. Don't know if you heard about this. A whistleblower against the Boeing Corporation turned up dead.
He gone!
Boeing denies any wrongdoing, saying the guy had a screw loose and they would know.
Woo, that was good.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, the Russian election was held this week, and Vladimir Putin is facing more dissent than ever before. In a sign a crackdown on the opposition might be coming, he's building thousands of new ninth floor windows.
Oh, boy.
Check them out. Check them out.
Well, according to a new study, 30% of Gen Z women now identify as LGBTQ. And, you know, it's not like they're all gay. The B's will still take D's. And finally, a Safeway employee was caught pleasuring himself on the fruits and vegetables.
Oh.
In his defense, that was some damn sexy celery. Celery had tits.
I'm cucumbing.
Oh, God.
Those were very funny.
Cucumber, get you. It. Those were great.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, folks, fun show today. We're going to be talking to Scott Grimes momentarily, but we have a very special guest this week. It's been a while since he's been here, by gar, but we keep begging him to come back. He's Tom Gamble's agent, Morty.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes, Morty is here. He can barely contain himself.
Hello, Goldie. Hello, Alec. Hello, CJ.
Morty.
Perfect.
Morty, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Well, it's been too long. Now, my question is, did I miss the Johnny jokes?
Yes, you just missed
them. Oh, shoot. Well, can I do a Johnny joke? I got a Johnny joke.
Please.
Yeah, it's here. It's under one of these paperweights. Hang on. Oh, here it is. It's a Karnak. Here goes. It's a Karnak. Hacky sack. Hacky sack. A briefcase full of Goldie scripts.
Oh, when he came on an attack.
Well, it's only because I'm still mad at Goldie for making that show with that title that always threw me. What was it called again?
Well, it was United We.
Yes, United We.
Fall.
Oh, boy.
I heard a slide whistle in there. Very good work.
I'm back.
Morty, what are you here to talk about today?
I'm here, as you requested, to give you my Oscar predictions.
Oh, Morty, the Oscars already happened.
Oh, geez. I missed it. Oh, well, I assume Billy Crystal was marvelous. He put the pepper in the pepper cush. Hey, hang on. I got a customer here. Hang on. Is that all for you today, sweetheart? These shoelaces? Okay, let me ring you up. That'll be 76 cents. Well, honey, you only got three quarters. You need a penny. Where's the extra penny? Well, come back when you got the penny. I'll hold the shoelaces for you. Bye-bye.
Morty, what's going on there?
Well, I'm helping my friend. Actually, he's my boss, Mr. Sayonara. He owns this nursing home in Downey, the Sayonara House. And I run the shoe repair pavilion. Alec, what size shoe do you wear?
I'm a 10.
Oh, ladies. Well,
well, you're in luck, because I have a beetle boots here. They were brought in by an elderly gentleman about a year ago, and apparently he got a ticket to ride to heaven. So you can have them just for the price it cost me to fix the heel. What do you say?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to do it.
Terrific. Okay, and CJ, I got some lovely slippers. They were a lovely elder woman. She tripped in the bathroom, and he drowned in the bathtub, but the slippers did not get wet. How does that sound for you? All it'll cost you is dinner at my place. How does that sound? We will not be serving stew if you get the double meaning. Now, you know, people talk about how bald Goldie is, but nobody talks about how small his feet are. His shoe size is American Girl doll.
It's a boy's 9, but okay.
Goldie has very small feet. Goldie, I roused you because, you had that show a few years back. What was it called again? It had a name. That
it was called United We Fall.
Oh boy, here we go.
Oh, down he goes.
All right, I'm back. Speaking of dolls and Barbie, so I don't want to give my Oscar predictions, but can I tell you about my client, Tom Gamble? I'm very excited about him.
Sure, please.
Well, as you know, he and worked with Max Prost for 40 years. And then during the pandemic, there was a glitch in his career. And Max panicked and he became an EMT. It's ironic, really, because, you know, when Max and Tom wrote at Seinfeld, Max was the king of the diarrhea jokes. Every day at a three, like clockwork, he'd say, what if Kramer got diarrhea? What if Elaine got, how about George getting diarrhea? Now you talk to Max about diarrhea and it gets very serious. It's like, oh, you can't joke about that. Diarrhea is the number one cause of dehydration in infants. Infants? What did Max care about infants? You know, when his own kids were infants, he was at Santa Anita spending all that money he made at dad's. But you know, Tom laid it on his feet. You know, his first love is the theater. It was Max who dragged him out to La La Land. But he loves New York. He loves the theater, the dance, the energy, the hustle and bustle. And you can get Egg Foo Young at 3 a.m. Where can you do that here in L.A.? So anyways, he wrote this play called A Morning with Ernie Bushmiller.
Oh,
it's going to premiere at Ohio State at the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library May 25th.
Morning?
What's that?
Morning?
Morning.
With Billy Bushmiller? Morning?
Yes.
Well, but you know, it's at night.
Well, you know
what? Wait a second. Oh, wait a you. Second. He's I think I found Tom. Something.
You know, Goldie, you're right, because Ernie Bushmiller usually worked very at night. It was very rare. It was very rare for him to be up at the morning hour. And what he was in his bathrobe. You didn't want to see him in his bathrobe because sometimes the belt came undone and wow.
And so wait. And so what is the play call again?
A morning.
Whoa.
Yeah, because plays traditionally happen in the evening. So
exactly.
This is all turned around. But this is true, right? Morty? This is a real event.
If you are in Columbus, Ohio on May 25th, go to the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library and see the show.
Are you in it as well? Are you?
Yes. No, I'm not. Tom, yeah. Tom Gamble is in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's a two-person show. And I know you're thinking like Ernie Bushmiller. Wait, you mean the cartoonist who was born in 1905 and died in 1982, and he was the creator of the comic strip Nancy with Nancy Sluggo and Fritzy Ritz? That comic strip was terrible. Well, that's what people thought back in the 70s and the 80s, but now they're looking back and they're saying it's pretty good. In fact, I would say that any one of your Oscar picks this year, any of the Oscar nominees, can't hold a candle to any daily comic strip from Nancy. And oh. throw a Oscar nominated movie at me, and I'll show you.
Okay. All right. What about Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer. Well, Nancy and Sluggo were the original Weisenheimers. And it didn't take 3 hours to tell the story. It took three panels. Panel number one, Nancy's looking at her TV. There's snow on the TV. It's a very bad reception. Panel number two, she's on the phone with Sluggo. Sluggo, I've got snow on my TV. Panel number three, we're at Sluggo's house. There's a hole in his ceiling. Snow is literally snowing on his TV. And he says, so am I. So is mine. All right, next movie. Next movie.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we can't talk about the Oscars without talking about Barbie.
Ah, Barbie. Barbie was a doll. Well, three panels. The first panel, Nancy buys a doll of a little wind up fat man with a bow tie. Panel number two, he winds it up, and panel number three, the doll makes a beeline to the refrigerator.
Oh, that is pretty good.
You've heard of I'm Not Ken? How about I'm Not Hungry? That's more relatable.
Oh, that's good. Topical. All right, let's hit another Oscar movie. What about Anatomy of a Fall?
Ah, Anatomy of a Fall. Panel number one, Sluggo is leaving a movie theater where he just saw a gangster picture. Panel number two, he says, I'd like to see the underworld, and panel number three, he's falling into a manhole cover.
Well, that's a good one. All right. So now let's talk about Killers of the Flower Moon.
How about Killers of the Flower Bed when Fritchie Rich found some beatniks doing the twist in her vegetable garden? Oh, hold on. Somebody's here. Oh, hey, it's Tom Gamble. Hello, Marty. Hello. Hi. Hello. Marty, do you have any work for me? I'm just wondering. Any calls or anything? Yes, I got a polish for you. Something by, let me get this name right, Manolo Blahnik. Oh, is it a script? Well, not exactly. Hey, I'm speaking to the friends of yours on the radio. What are they called? Freebie and the Bean. What? Freebie and the Bean. Give me that phone. Hello? Hello, Tom Gamble.
Hi, Tom. Oh, Tom. Hey, it's JC, Goldie, and Alec.
Well, hello.
Disgusting display. How are you?
Good. I just came to visit Marty. I don't want to. I got an exciting job with. It sounds like it's an Italian picture. But anyways, did you by any chance hear about the play I'm doing at Ohio State? A Morning with Ernie Bushmiller.
A Morning.
Yes,
I did. Yes. We were all quite shocked by that. But tell us again when that is. Where?
It's at the Ohio State Billy Ireland Cartoon Museum on May 25th. They're having a whole 2 days celebrating Nancy, the comic strip created by Ernie Bushmiller, and there's going to be it's going to be a lot of fun. But it's ending with the play written by me, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And actually, I'm doing some practice shows here in Altadena, and I was thinking maybe we could get the dad's writers out here, and I could put it on for you guys, see what you think.
That would be great. I'll send out an email. I'll invite everybody.
Okay, so good.
Is there anything else you've been working on lately, Tom?
Well, I was on Curb Your Enthusiasm this season as a consulting producer.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm very proud. I told those guys about the coyote vest, and it's made in the picture because that coyote vest actually saved our little dog Lucy's life many times during the pandemic. We had a lot of coyotes and I would actually watch Lucy outside wearing the vest, and a coyote would come in and come up and see it and run away. So it's really good.
Wow.
Well, so now I know you're under strict confidentiality about the season because it's the final season.
Yes.
Everybody wants to know how it ends. What can you tell us?
I can't tell you anything. Here's some tips for you young writers out there. If you're working on a show and you're not running a show, don't go on a podcast and talk like you're running the show. Just shut up. Just do your work. You know, it's like, I'm serious. Like sometimes you read a post that says like, hey, I wrote 80% of the jokes in this script this week. Yeah, unless you're Goldie, you do not write 80% of the script. And don't be doing the math. Just shut up and do the job of writing.
That's great. That's my voice. That's
hey, listen. Great. I listened to the show last week, and I heard about Levy getting in trouble for during the roll call saying the kid was dead.
Yeah.
And you were called in. So a similar thing happened to my son, Henry, when he was in second grade. He's in class and they're doing this worksheet and it's about Bobby and Susie going to their grandparents' farm. And Bobby and Susie, they pick apples. And Bobby and Susie help Grandma slice the apples. And Bobby and Susie help put the apples in the crust and it's in the oven. And then it comes out as a pie. And Grandma cuts the pie. And then before they sit down, Grandma announced that Bobby and Susie would be spending the whole summer with their grandparents on the farm. And the question was, what do Bobby and Susie do next? And the exact answer was eat the pie. And Henry, when hearing Bobby and Susie were spending the whole summer with their grandparents, wrote, Bobby and Susie commit suicide. So we were called in that day.
Well, I'm encouraged by that because Henry spends a month out of the year dressed as a pumpkin. So I have high hopes for it to be going forward.
So I had to go in and explain, no, you see, my parents and grandparents are very boring. And if you had to spend a whole summer with them, you would commit suicide. This is a perfectly natural response.
And did Mrs. G whap you with her pocketbook all the way out to the car?
But unlike you, we said, like, Henry, that was really funny. We don't, and I promise you, you will never spend a summer on the farm with your grandparents.
Well, I loved hearing that story. And, well, listen, we loved hearing from Morty.
Oh, yes.
And we loved hearing Tom from you about your upcoming show. We can't wait to see it here in Altadena.
In Altadena.
And say the title one last time.
A morning with Ernie Bushmiller.
Plays happen at night. That's great.
I know. Exactly. Well, believe me, we get a lot of mileage out of being in the morning.
All right, Tom. Morty,
all right, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
Great seeing you.
Yeah.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Oh, friends, listeners, we are incredibly excited today. Here's a much promoted guest is here with us today. Finally, we are incredibly excited to have him. We are going to be talking with actor, singer, entrepreneurs, Mr. Scott Grimes.
Oh, I didn't know you were talking about me.
But first, Scott, we wanted to make you feel welcome. So we've prepared a little theme for you here today. JC, will you hit that, please?
I know what it's going to be.
Star of the day, who will it be? Your role may hold the key, it's up to you. Tell us who will be star of the day.
Yes. Okay, Scott Grimes.
Is that the American Dad theme?
I haven't caught it.
No, Scott, that gives me anxiety like you wouldn't believe, that song.
I'm sure.
Really?
Memories from like
seven. You were backstage. So let's explain that, because this is how, and Scott, you and I have talked about this many times, but my dad and I every week would watch this show, a local talent show in Boston called Community Auditions. It was on Channel 4, hosted by Dave Maynard, who was a local TV personality. And honestly, my dad and I watched it. It's no secret to watch people be terrible. Like, it was funny every week because you'd get local talent. The studio audience was so sparse. It was, it just had all the trappings of a local talent show, and it was usually funny and bad. And then the clouds parted and out onto the stage steps a redheaded angel named Scott Grimes. And your singing absolutely captivated us. And you were a celebrity to us when I was 10, when you were, 11.
Yeah. I love this.
So it was just amazing watching.
I'm older than you?
I know, that tripped me out, actually.
Yeah.
Is that true?
You're older than me, pal. I just looked it up on Wikipedia.
Whoa.
Don't let this gray beard fool you. But we're all essentially the same age. So let's talk a little bit about Community Auditions, because, by the way, this Community Auditions does not exist on your Wikipedia page, which I found highly offensive.
Oh, yeah. I do agree with that. I would want that. Remember, you got to remember, first of all, this is before Star Search.
Oh, yes.
Right?
So
that's
amazing.
That's what I love about it, is it was this kind of local star. But also, Alec, I think you should go back and watch it, me, Because the angel thing you just said,
yes,
it's not what you remember. It was the sign of the times of who couldn't sing like that at the time. Now everybody can, right?
I don't know. I
still disagree. I mean,
okay,
you have a tenor voice that absolutely cuts through the haze. And when
still do
you sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you sang The Greatest Love of All. I mean, and these
wow.
are
a fan.
These are
and coming from Lowell, Mass. Was this something that got you a lot of acclaim in the school system? Would you say? Or
you know what it got me for it? I took the girls loved it.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
But I'll tell you a 2 second story of what that show got me when it started to get popular. Because what you do is you'd win like the quarterfinals and then the semifinals and then you'd down. And as it got, I remember one day I was in class at whatever school I was in, and I got summoned to the principal's office in the middle of class. They wanted me to sing. All the teachers were, and I stood in the circle. They stood in the circle, and I sang for them, and it was lovely. And as I was walking back to the room, some kid who at this time looks like he was 45 to me, right?
Right.
But he was probably a year older than me. And he looked at me and he goes, "What did you just do?" I said, I was just singing. Because he was in the principal's office because he was in trouble.
Right. Oh.
And I'm in there singing like the angel you described. And he walks up to me, goes, "You singing, huh?" Yeah. He grabs the back of my head and smashes it into the cement floor.
Yeah.
I had a lump out to here that I could see. So there's your answer. So
that's Massachusetts for you.
Yeah. 70s, 80s trouble and 70s, 80s bullies was just crime.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I was out of school for like 3 weeks. I had a massive concussion. And the only thing I remember is they made him apologize to me at recess.
Oh my God.
But I think about that guy a lot. Way too much. Because I hope he's not around anymore.
I had like a sty in my eye, and I was on the way to the nurse's office, and I was like kind of blinking. Like I was like, and I was walking to the nurse's office, and there were parts in our school where it was like, do not walk in this part of school. Like,
wow.
Oh.
And of course I was like, it's between classes, it'll be fine. And a kid steps in front of me, like this hockey player.
Oh,
who's,
no.
you know, older, 3 years older, built. And he goes, "Oh, what are you fucking blinking?" And he goes, and he starts blinking. He goes, "What are you fucking blinking?" And then he just punches me in the face.
Oh,
and so then I get to the nurse's office and she's like, "Well, why are you here?" And I was like, "Well, originally I was here because I had a thing in my eye, but now I have been punched in the face."
Oh, my God.
Oh, it didn't. It wasn't.
He's
it
in
wasn't,
jail.
Yeah.
Is but it
also he's, remember, he's drug always, dealing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know where my guy is, but
we should go on a Massachusetts revenge tour.
I was competing, Goldie. I was competing with the fact that I also am a redhead, and I was a slight, and I was, you know, so I had a lot going, not going for me. You know,
I mean, I was bald. No,
even then. Wow. Well, now, so but let's town check, because Goldie said Lowell. I know you were born there, but are we actually talking about Drake it?
Right,
yeah.
Drake it small. Nobody knows Drake it, right? It's more close in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah, we know Drake it. Drake it.
Drake it.
The T is like something about the T that people say in Drake it. It gets lost in the wash.
My name too would be Scott.
Yeah. Scott from Drake it. Yeah. All the T's are lost somehow.
Yeah. So Drake it was it was very small where you can get away with shit like that, right?
But so let's get back to community audition. So you hear the theme today. It makes you nervous because it puts you back in a place where you're in the dressing room or you're getting ready to go out there and perform.
Yep.
Well, now, what was it like? Because I know what it was like as an audience member at home. You know, it's like we're watching TV. It's comfortable. You get a sense watching at home that the studio audience is tiny and sad.
Yes.
But I'm wondering, what was the experience in that studio like for you when you're performing?
I can still remember just how scared I was every time, because it was at, I don't know if you ever went there. It was at like in Boston at like the news studio.
So I have been there.
Oh my God. It was at that time. Yes. It was so scary. Like we were this small little show that was taping in some room, but everything else was like, this is going to happen. And there were things going and news people were running around. It was really intimidating. This is funny. I'll never forget. My dad would carry, you remember certs?
Yeah.
Yes.
For some reason, we thought certs was the answer to all singers. And by the way, they were just little discs of pure sugar.
Sugar.
Yeah.
But my dad would just keep feeding me syrup. To calm me down or make me, you know, whatever. And then he'd tell me to go poop about every 2 minutes. And he'd go in. And yeah, it was really scary because it was live. Am I wrong? It was live, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Seems
and
like
they'd
it.
Put your parents in the audience. And the lighting was terrible. So everybody looked. Remember, they'd always show the studio audience. It was really scary.
Do you remember the other acts? Was it like there had to be ventriloquism?
There was not ventriloquism. There was lots of like singing little girls, which, by the way, now I look back, I was kind of one of them, right? Really what it was.
Yeah, you were castrati.
But the thing is, and I think Alec knows this, I kept winning and winning. And it was just, oh, look at this kid and he can sing. I lost at the end. I came in second to banjo player.
Yeah.
What?
You got so ripped off. We were incensed.
Oh, you
when
watched
that, happened.
That too? Oh my God, yeah. This is amazing.
He won.
No, you should have absolutely won. And I think, you know, time has proven that you should
was
have.
Was it
been
Ed Helms?
That.
Was that the other thing?
Right.
That makes sense. Yeah. And I won a big giant trophy and a television set. That's what I won.
What?
He won a bigger trophy and a bigger television. That's what it was.
Yeah. God, those TVs must have been so heavy. I can only imagine.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
And we've talked about this because, and I don't know if you crossed paths at the time, but Sarah Silverman was also on that show.
Yes. No
she
way.
Did a very brassy version of "Look at Mama, you can't rock me anymore."
Oh my God! Awesome.
But did you ever? Were you aware of her at the time?
I look in years since then. She has when I've run into her. She's reminded me that we knew each other then, but at the time I don't remember. I really don't.
And I'm because you were the big star. You were the big star.
Yeah, it was weird. I don't remember her being on that. The only other girl that came from there, if you remember Kids Incorporated, there was a girl named Renee Sandstrom.
Okay.
I remember Kids Incorporated.
She changed her name to Renee Sands, and she was in a group with Fergie. That's the only other person that I remember.
Okay.
Going somewhere.
How did you not end up a Zoom kid?
What's that?
Great. I think seriously though, I think I auditioned for that. Like that was the next because it was out of Boston, right?
It was like educational show with this group of four or five kids, right? That I feel like they sang and they danced as part of it. I mean, I used to watch it religiously.
Yeah, I think I probably auditioned and didn't get it.
Yeah, Zoom was like our electric company, right?
Okay.
Zoom was the Boston version of the electric company.
Right.
But you were, I mean, again, I've said it to you 1,000 times in person. You really had an impact on me and my dad.
That is
and,
so
and,
sweet.
And it was something that, as I said, my dad and I used to love laughing at things that were terrible. And then we could not laugh at you. And we had to look at each other and be like, that kid is great. So you really made an impact on us. So let's talk about, because we talked about Lowell Drakett. So you're born in Lowell. Mm-hmm. And then your family moved, was it to New Mexico? No.
We took a trip on a train for one weekend to New York City.
So that's what I meant.
Yeah,
that's where Wikipedia says you lived in New Mexico. By the way,
it does.
Yeah,
never
it
even
says
been
you
to
lived
New
there till you were 10.
Yeah,
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I know. Well, that was strange to me too because you have such a command over the Boston accent, as we saw in the TED series, which we'll talk about later. You have the command of the accent that really only comes from growing up there.
Yeah. Yeah, which is weird because I left on a train with my parents one weekend to go on just for vacation. And we were walking through the streets of New York on a Saturday afternoon. Our train was going to be on Sunday to go back home. And there was a sign that used to be called the 46th Street Theater. It's now the Richard Rogers, I believe, where Hamilton was. And we passed by the theater and they were having open auditions to go sing for Tommy Tune for this new show. And I walked in, sang for Tommy Tune. He walks out to my parents and says, "You're not going home for a year. We start previews tomorrow. We start rehearsals tomorrow for a new Broadway show called Nine."
Wow.
Which won Best Musical like 2 months later.
And so were you just like, "I will drop out of school now"? And
basically did. Because the laws back then, Goldie, was they weren't
none.
Any.
Right.
Yeah. It was like the choice right now, be successful the rest of your life at doing this and be stupid.
You just walked in. That. I've never heard of that. That's incredible. You walked in. You saw that they were having open auditions. You walked in and then you booked it.
That's right.
That's so
and
cool.
I started rehearsals that Monday. And
how old were you?
About to turn 11.
I can't believe they used to cast things with just like a poster in the street. Yep. You know,
unbelievable.
Yeah. And maybe, all right. Tommy Toon's still around. He's still doing it.
So, wow. So we got 9 and 11 there. That's in New York City. How did you do that? you predicted the future. but what do you remember from that show? Like, what was Tommy Toon like? I feel like he's only someone that I just kind of hear about in a joke.
Yeah, right. No, he was great. But back then, and maybe today, Broadway directors kind of directed you during rehearsals and then you never saw them again.
So where did he live?
We lived at the Sheraton City Squire on like 54th Street for a year.
Oh, my God.
I was making $480 a week.
Oh, no.
And the hotel was what, $2,000 a week, you know. Yes. It was the most ridiculous investment. Maybe not.
Right.
I lived at the Sheraton City Squire for a year with my mom.
And your parents, were they at all into show business or?
My dad was like a folk singer. You know, he taught me how to sing, but nothing, nothing like this. So they loved
it. I mean, I'm just trying to picture the 70s or 80s. If I told my parents I wanted to sing, they would have just been puzzled and sent me back to my room.
You know, this was different. I felt like people ask me all the time, like, did you, you know, the pushy parent, that famous 80s thing that I'll probably end up talking about on this. Of pushy parents, and my parents were not. I felt like I was kind of leading them and pulling them along, which they were just saying, yes, sure, let's try this. What an adventure.
It's interesting. My dad very much encouraged me to go into acting. Like, he liked to encourage that. And I went to an acting class, which was in this woman's garage in Wayland. and her claim to fame was, and I can't remember this guy's last name and it's going to kill me, but maybe you are aware of him. There was, because I will tell you why. He was also a redhead. Huh? His name was Alistair something. And he was the claim to fame of this Wayland sort of theater school in the garage was that they were able to get him local commercials. And there was a local commercial on the Community Auditions Network, Channel 4, where Channel 4 was like, we're protecting, you know, the most valuable resource in our community, our future. And it was a kid, a redheaded kid, walking out of like a sort of heavenly spotlight, like looking around like, oh, he's Mr. Future Kid. And it was this kid, Alistair, another redhead. But he couldn't sing like a bird.
Is
like
that where you got that headshot?
Yes.
Oh, that's
have you seen
amazing.
His headshot? Alex is awesome. From his teen years.
No.
We'll put it up later.
I didn't know you were.
He's basically dressed what an out-of-touch adult would think a young tough looked like.
Yes.
Like it's sort of a combination of a greaser and Michael Jackson. And you are wearing like a glove, right? Like a driving glove.
Yep.
Am I right about that?
Yes.
And a kind of members-only
like
jacket.
Oh, I thought it was leather.
A members only style jacket, like pleather with the white piping along the outside and like a sort of...
I know that jacket.
The driving glove with the exposed knuckle holes.
These were pictures,
so
right?
Sick.
To get a job, get a spell.
Yeah. Like a headshot.
Like, what role do you need kid?
I will tell you that headshot got me 2 callbacks for a TJ Maxx ad back then. And so all we had to do, and of course this is why I didn't get it, when the auditions kept happening, they would bring you in and all you had to do was like dance in khakis. And so
and you're
that,
like
whatever my quote unquote dancing did not quite put me over the top. they were the ads that became the TJ Maxx.
Oh wow,
that were on forever.
Wow, that would have paid you well.
But that was my one brush with fame. It was almost getting a TJ Maxx.
I know a guy who was wearing the Hanes underwear in the like Sears circular that used to come with a Globe on Sundays as a kid, and it's like you would be sitting next to a weight bench in your Hanes underwear.
Those were uncomfortable photos, I remember.
Yeah.
I booked a lot of those.
Did you do print as well?
JC. Like,
you know what? I think I did print, but again, I wasn't, you know, I'm not it wasn't like, let's get this guy. You know,
I need the redhead.
Yeah,
JC did.
Alistair clearly was getting all of those votes.
those were for Alistair. Yeah, no, Jason, we should talk to our resident print model ad, JC, right here.
We found, when we were going through all of our old, memories and stuff, I found all the archived, like, modeling, hilarious, like, catalog photos. And because I was a plus size model, I'm doing air quotes, there are photos of me with, we had like a set of padding that you'd have to wear under your clothes to make yourself look fatter or bigger, I should say.
That's what the plus size thing had in mind in terms of equality.
Represents
someone thin in a fat suit.
Right. Yeah. Well, now they don't do that. So sadly, so that didn't work out for me. But yeah, we found all these, you know, there's like Lord and Taylor, and I've got four layers of padding on each side.
Can we play a game? But you might not remember, so... Can we each guess what you would be paid for one of those sessions?
For a modeling?
Yeah, session? For one session. One.
What, wait, where are we? What state are we in?
New York City.
Oh, okay.
And what? Give us a year approximately.
2000.
2000?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would guess then, in that case, I'm going to say $980.
Okay.
I was going to say $500.
I'm going to say $979.
Oh, that's that's the opposite of the Price is Right strategy.
Goldie, it's $1,200.
No, that was me. I said $980.
Yeah, he said more.
Oh, sorry.
$1,200 is more than I thought. I was on the high side.
Yeah, no.
$1,200 is good.
I feel bad that I just did that for you. You're terrible.
No, because that was bucks. Like the minimum, I guess, that the agency would
take
for. Yeah,
you get hazard
bookings,
pay for the fat suit.
Well, they have to, they
I didn't
charge
take that
like
into consideration.
my sister went to a high school in that area called Noble in Greeno and Dedham. And one of her classmates was this very pretty, and my sister's older than I am by like 8 years. And one of her classmates was this very pretty girl named Peg Stimson. And she was in the weekly ads in the paper in like her bra and underwear, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember going to see my sister in her school musical at Nobles. And I was like the cute little brother. I was so much younger than they were. And this woman, Peg Stimson, who was just gorgeous, was singing a song on stage, and she came out walking into the audience, and she came and sat in my lap and said my name during the thing. Hello, Alec, like that. Yeah. And I just remember like, that's it. Girls got me. I'm done. Whatever girls want to do, that's fine. Like, you got me.
Ruined you.
But so let's talk about, so you get this musical, which again, that's also not in your Wikipedia, which would be a very interesting
part of it.
So what happens after that? Because we see you on community auditions, you're doing this musical in New York. And then the next thing I know, you're in Hollywood in movies.
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
Well, first of all, remember, I did the Broadway show. Because you're on Broadway, you're auditioning for television commercials all day.
Right.
So I met Seth Green. You know, I'd walk to an audition. If I saw Seth Green, I was like, it's one of us.
Right. That's funny.
Right. You know, and I got my SAG card just immediately. And I say that because it's so difficult nowadays. But somebody paid for it because it was this, and they needed this redheaded because Seth wasn't available or something like that. You know. And then I did another Broadway show called Chaplin that I got through that brought me to LA in previews.
Okay.
And then we were like, okay, Hollywood and TV movies of the week were my jam. When they were huge.
Yeah.
Yes. So
I was in 12 freaking Christmas TV movies of the week with huge suit, like Mickey Rooney. I did one with.
Did that make you a celebrity, or did that just make you more like a working actor? It was so much smaller than that. Like anyone who did anything, seemed more prominent.
I think that's because I felt like a celebrity just because of the people that were in them. Right. I look back now, and it was like Mickey Rooney wasn't getting the big movies. He was getting paid for these little
TV
movies of the week, but it was still Mickey Rooney.
It was still,
and I'm standing next to him. I'm his grandson, so I felt.
I love that.
Yeah.
What do you remember about Mickey Rooney?
I remember everything that, you know, people talk about. He was very kind of, forgive me, very, you know, seems like a nice guy, but very violent man.
Oh, like an angry man.
When he had to like pat his little grandson on the back.
Well, he got payback. Come on, let's
go. Yeah. He'd hit you really hard.
Whoa, really?
And he also, and I hate to rag on somebody like Mickey Rooney, but he also told me some advice that I kept with me for years, and it was wrong. Yeah. He said, hey, son, when you're acting, don't look in someone's eyes. Look at their forehead. Yes, look at their forehead.
He's so, like 2 feet tall, though. That's why. Probably.
Think about it. After that, when I'm doing these movies and, you know, I'm talking to Elliot Gould and Elliot's like, why the fuck do you keep looking at my eyes? I'm like, Mickey Rooney told me to do that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that seems like it would intentionally enrage the other actor in your scene.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong? What is wrong? Yeah. Wasn't there a scene in The American Office where Jim is staring at Dwight's forehead? Yes. And he's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? That's so funny. Yeah,
he was fun. And then years later, right? You guys know there's a camera move that they call the Mickey Rooney.
No,
I don't. Yeah,
so I was on the set of ER, and they're like, hey, let's go over here and we'll do a little Mickey Rooney onto Scott. I'm like, why do you call it that? They're like, oh, it's a little creep.
That is awesome. Right.
So oh now, my God, yeah. That's funny.
Now, how long? After these, so you're in these movies of the week, which you're right, like those were the only game in town at the time. Like you're getting 20-25 million people watching these movies of the week, which
absolutely.
Is, you know, it's like a communal experience. Yeah. And you did some of the Christmas ones. I can only imagine, you know, if Mickey Rooney's in them in their Christmas TV movies, what they must have been like. But then you make the jump into something that people still talk about to this day, which is Critters.
Yeah.
Like, so that was a big deal. And I remember, because that was like 85-86, and still I'm, you know, 12-13, and watching you, and I remember talking to my dad again, like, oh, there's my the kid from Community Audition, Scott Grimes with the voice, he's in movies. And I just remember my dad being like, does he sing? And I'm like, I don't know. No, it's not that kind of movie. But what was that? How did you get Critters?
Well, again, like, I didn't get Critters. Sean, I didn't get Goonies and I didn't get Critters. So I auditioned for both. Sean Astin got Critters, turned it down to do Goonies. Right? So the story isn't... So I was second choice for Critters.
Well, you could look at it like that.
To the point where if you saw Sean Astin at the time, and he still is, he's kind of like a, you know... Husky
stocky
guy, and he looked like he was, you know, he looked ahead of it. He was a cool, good looking kid. So if you watch Critters, I'm wearing this weird pink. Everybody wears the same because it's one day.
Yeah.
Critters, the movie's like one day and one night.
Right.
So you're the same outfit. Same
pink shirt with the most ridiculous shoulder pads.
Oh, no way. After you watch it.
To make me look like Sean Astin.
That's weird. God.
But I was, you know, I didn't know that at the time. I was told that later by Stephen Herrick, who was
Do you have something from around that time that you look back on that you were very close to getting that you really are bummed you didn't get?
It would be more as an adult actor, like the Green Mile I almost got, and but back then a kid I didn't care enough, I guess. Oh, Stand By Me.
Oh
wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Stand By Me was that.
What role did you go
and
for?
I went, funny enough, to tell a quick story, I went to vibrato with McFarlane to go see him sing, and Rob Reiner walks over to the table. This is like 3 months ago, guys.
Oh, wow.
I had had enough drinks. I thought he would give a crap. I must have yelled it too loud, or I must too. All I said to him, he's sitting there talking to Seth, and I'm over here, and I'm like, hey, I auditioned for Stand By Me. Like an idiot. And he did this. He went, and kept talking to Seth. Didn't give me the time of day. And I realized now, I'm like, what a stupid thing I said.
I love it.
Everybody auditioned for Stand By Me.
No, he could have been nicer in that moment. That's not on you. You were. Yeah.
It's also
him
the thing, if he knew you knew Seth, he would have been nicer. So it's kind of lame that he wasn't nicer only because he didn't know you knew Seth.
Maybe. But he also doesn't, Rob Reiner doesn't scream, I'm a nice guy, right? He doesn't right. feel like he's the nicest man.
True.
But Stand By Me would have been the one.
Because, I once saw him. I drove by, I forget the name of the steakhouse on Sunset Boulevard, but he was just out eating a giant steak by himself, like on the patio on Sunset Boulevard, awesome. Which is like, wow. That lines up. That's the celebrity you would think would be eating a giant steak alone.
That's there were a lot of those. There were a lot of those movies, you know. Then
do you remember some of the other people who were swirling around Stand By Me at the time? I mean, other than the people who
like
ended
auditioning.
Up getting it. Yeah.
You mean, well, we were everybody, it was a much smaller group of actors back then. And yeah. What was really cool, you can look back at teen magazines, right?
Yeah.
Teen magazines would have Michael J. Fox on the cover and then a guy that was in one episode of My Two Dads. You know, they didn't right. care.
Yeah.
They really didn't. It was really kind of cool.
Just so were you living by yourself or with parents?
No,
or like
always with my mom. My dad would kind of. Like when we moved to Queens, then I came out to LA and he'd have to sell the house in Queens. So he was about 6 months behind us.
I see. Yeah.
Which was awesome. I mean, meaning awesome that he would do that for us because my parents are awesome. And so we all stayed together. My sister absolutely hated it because she wanted to be a regular person and live right. in Drake, Massachusetts, and be the pretty cheerleader and the thing. And she's right. incredible, but she didn't love it. So she,
yeah, she's like, why do we have to follow our brother? I don't want to follow my brother.
It was kind of like that. And she did a bunch of TV commercials, but she didn't, you know, you got to love it. I guess you got to really love it to continue it.
Yeah.
How long to go back to Community auditions? How long did you hang on to the white Don Johnson blazer that you were wearing?
White Don Johnson blazer was when I came back as a special guest.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
When you're invited back to just sing and you're not in competition, you're just the special guest. That's when
the white blazer,
it had a little bit of yellow in it though. But if you look back, It was worse than you think.
My friend, his dad ran a dry cleaner in Boston and they were going out of business. Like it was really hard. And then Miami Vice came on and everyone started wearing linen. And then they ended up opening like six more and wound up very rich. But it was all because of Miami Vice. Yeah.
That is so great.
That's amazing.
That was the look, man.
Amazing. Yeah. All right,
but just so you know, when we have the time, I do have Alex headshot.
You do?
I do.
Oh.
So should I show it later?
We can share that as an asset anytime. Okay. I think, you know, actually show it for Scott. Yeah. Yes. So he can get in on the action
it's
here.
It's going to pop up in my head.
It's going to show right now.
Oh, that's worse than I remember.
I don't see it. It just says.
Yeah. There it is. There it is.
Oh wow!
Yeah, my nose didn't explode for a couple more years. So,
but look at the glove.
I see it though. I see where it was going.
Here's the white piping.
Yeah, like because the turtleneck. You look so helpless and like you'd be punched in the face, but then you're wearing this like theater tough guy outfit. Like you're in Guys and Dolls or something. Like it's crazy. It's so schizophrenic.
I was in the Rare remake Dolls and Dolls. Yeah.
What was the point of the knuckleless gloves? Like in general.
It's all for airflow. let your knuckles breathe when you're driving. It's very important. Of course, I was still many years away from driving at that point. Yeah, thank you for that humiliating.
Speaking of that picture, though, I remember all the pictures were in black and white. So I disappointed a lot of casting rooms, right? Because they all the pictures were black and white. And I'd walk in with this
redhead.
And my hair back then, guys, was more orange. It wasn't red.
Oh.
It was
so red. So Cheeto. Red. Cheeto
Absolutely.
Orange.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that made stand out a little, right?
I mean,
yeah, it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. If you're looking for that, you know, you got to do double the work if they're not looking.
All right. So you're out in LA, you're starting to get movies, you're in TV movies. And what was that whole process like? Because you're in Critters and then you sort of do a series of movies, including the Critters sequel, which is awesome to be in a movie that warrants a sequel. So when you come back for the Critters sequel, was that like a love fest? Was everyone so excited to be doing it again, or was it a slog?
It was. I look back now and I felt like a badass, right?
Yeah,
because you can't awesome. Recast. There was no competition, right. So there was a confidence to it that was great. It's relative. I wasn't at all, because remember, my best friends were Sean Astin, Mackenzie Astin, Kirk Cameron, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, and they were doing these giant movies, and I was still doing. So we can sit there and talk about me all we want right now, but it wasn't the greatest time.
I understand that.
It was absolutely B movie. I was working, but I guess in hindsight, I thought I could be doing better.
Were you stressed out? Because you're what age at this point?
Oh, 14, 15.
So 16. Are you stressed like an adult about your career, or are you just sort of thinking like, I've already done more than most people ever do in their lives. I could just be a regular person.
I want both of those things. I was stressed. There was many times that I wanted to quit and go play professional hockey. That's all I wanted to do.
Oh, wow.
But I will say, we were in
so a. So you were that good at hockey. I mean, then you must be pretty good.
I was pretty good at hockey. Yeah. And awesome. I wanted to do that. But it was, I don't know. Again, all my friends, my mother is now like a manager.
Right.
And my manager. So that was the world back then. And Jason Hervey's mom and my mom started an agency.
Oh, Jason Hervey.
Yeah.
God, what an 80s pull that guy is. He had the best, one of the best 80s faces. It was like an 80s face from the 1940s he had.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he was,
yeah.
So he, and just, Wonder you know, how. Years. How weird that group was. I ended up marrying Jason Hervey's first girlfriend. Like years and years later, that's how kind of small that world was of people, and have two kids with that person. Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's sweet.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Now you mentioned some of your friends, and you mentioned the Coreys, who were their own universe at that time. Did you get sucked into any of the kind of the world of LA, the underworld of LA, like some of them did, where you're drunk at the age of 15, or having your mom there? Was that a little bit?
My mom and dad by then were there. And that's a really, thank you for asking that question, because I saw it. I was protected by it, by not only my parents, but those kids, Corey and Corey. I'm going to say this, and one's gone, and I would never say anything bad about any of their parents, but mine were better.
Right.
You know, at that time at navigating the B movie actor, right? I can't say how they were navigating their giant superstar children, you know,
and
but clearly the rules were different, and my rules were. And Corey, we're talking to Alyssa Milano, we're talking to Cole Eggert. We were all a group of friends.
Yeah.
They respected my parents. So I kind of feel like, and it's more of a story you can tell now because you never know what's true, that they were saying, Scott's, this isn't for Scott.
Yes. Thank God. Right.
He's not from where we're from. And so I saw it happen, and I saw things that in hindsight, I probably could have done something about. But like the good example is I was supposed to do License to Drive. Corey and Corey wanted me to be in it, but my parents wouldn't emancipate me. And you had to be. They were like, no, we're doing night shoots for, 4 months. We're worried about the child rules or whatever.
Did you resent your parents at the time?
Huh?
Did you resent your parents at the time with their restrictions?
Probably, but not, again, I had such a great relationship with them. That,
I got to say, there's also probably significant delinquency in Drake It. People always point to Hollywood and say, well, this happened. But I knew plenty of people, and I grew up in a nice suburb of Boston, but I knew plenty of people who were just burnouts and washouts. We used to call them burnouts. I don't know.
Totally.
No, I know. Yeah, I was just, I wouldn't. It would have been way worse if I had stayed.
I mean, I remember a guy in the yearbook, and his quote was, 1 foot in the grave, one on the pedal, because I was born a rebel.
Oh my. Okay.
It was like
that almost rhymes.
He was friggin' smoking. I mean, there was like a smoking area, and those kids were like drinking, and they were running wild.
It was a different time. Yeah. And but so thankfully your parents weren't like, okay, Scott,
bye.
You can go play with Michael Jackson too.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. And I just felt, I don't know, I felt this thing from like Corey Haim specifically, just kind of. I think, protected me from all the things that were kind of true with him that we, you know, it's a whole other topic that I don't, you know, we don't love to talk about because he's not here to defend himself. So
no. Right. But one who is Corey Feldman.
Yes.
And so do you get the same feeling? Because I think we in the writer's room the other day, even a couple weeks ago, we watched, out of morbid fascination, one of Corey Feldman's concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that for someone who, you know, you're buddies with him growing up and you're also you're an amazing singer, and watching him do that thing, does that make you feel any kind of way about what's going on with him? I mean, do you feel like good for you, you're doing it? Or is it more like, oh, come on, dude?
It's the first one you said, but it's not like good for you, you're doing it. You're clearly having fun. You're right. Clearly in another universe that you don't, that you can't look at yourself and see what we see.
Right.
That
right.
also makes me go, oh my God, dude.
Yeah.
How can I help you understand that these people that are showing up, they're not showing up for the reason you think they're showing up.
Yeah.
you know, that's but and also what pisses me off, and you guys will agree, Corey Feldman is a really good actor.
Yeah.
Like why are you choosing this when you could settle down for a second, take a year off and come back? Guarantee you're going to work because he's just really good. Yeah, I was just watching The Burbs. He's had a small role in The Burbs, but he's terrific.
Oh, as a young kid, he had something. Like, I remember because I loved horror movies and I watched Friday the 13th Part 4 that he's in as a little kid. And he's so good in that. Corey Haim was the same way. They both had this thing of like they're somehow connecting to something where they just seem like actors. They were kids, but they didn't seem like kid actors, which
right.
is right. their own thing. That's interesting. I didn't know you were buddies with them. But
But so, that transition too, right? That we're in right now that we're talking about is that's the thing that I don't understand how I did. And I'm not complimenting myself because, you know, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim, they didn't have to go through a transition. They were shoot superstars. The only thing they had to do was keep getting better.
Yeah.
But me, I was kind of that actor that's like, okay, there's pimples on your face now, Scott. And that's all you had going was whatever that I didn't have, you know,
the money maker.
Right. But well, you know, and it wasn't making a ton of money. Right.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's interesting because over the years, and by the way, we'll get to this and talk about this more, but congratulations on being in the fucking best picture of the year.
Ooh.
I mean, that's what an accomplishment that is. You're
the number one streaming series comedy.
This is a big
same time. Yeah.
This is like almost the Matthew Perry territory of the number one movie, number one TV show.
Watch it. Let's not make any comparisons there.
No, but that's all. I think. Thank you for saying that. That's all. I'm not being self-deprecating. It's just you can't plan that.
Right.
Neither of those things, right? You audition for something, you get it, you're in it, and it has a life of its own. So, I'm just
it's awesome to see again because every time I look at you, I'm taken back to community auditions, and I think like, holy shit. Here's this kid who was performing, as you say, in that dumpy, scary studio,
you know,
on whatever drive it was on the fringes of Newton and Boston. And now you're in the best picture. And not only are you in it, but all of your scenes are with our reigning best supporting actor, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
So what was it? And you talk about a guy who did it all, who had the Corey's experience in his life,
right.
but then came out, like you said, rose like a phoenix on the other side. what was he like to work with?
Like I was nervous coming on to this interview because I dig the three of you and I'm scared of all three of you because you're
down. shouldn't be.
I know, but I think I like canceled this interview a bunch of times just out of fear.
Did you? We didn't notice.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I think so. Walking onto that set was the most scared I've ever been, right? Walking onto Oppenheimer. And he could not have been more welcoming and more just, he knew it. He could sense it. He's been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
And he did that thing too, where he immediately goes, Scott, yeah, man, love your work over the years and da 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 da. And you felt, okay, I'm on this team, I'm in this group. And I'm now I can do my best work. So he was just absolutely incredible.
How do you audition for Oppenheimer? For those of us who don't know, like, do you get a few pages of a script and then you just tape yourself in your home, or like, and what's your approach to that?
Well, I got one page and it was a scene from another movie that I'd never heard of, or something Chris Nolan wrote. I still don't know to this day. It had zero to do with Oppenheimer. It was just kind of like, here's the smell of this to see if you could play a guy from the 1940s, 50s, right?
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm guessing now.
Yeah.
It was four lines and I had a full giant beard because I think I was getting ready to do Ted, kind of. So I was like, oh, maybe Maddie should have a big beard.
Yeah.
So nothing about me looked like Oppenheimer should have looked, right? That movie. And I got a call 3 days later saying, you got the part.
Like, what part?
They just sent me five pages, right, of the script. I never, ever, still to this day, never got a whole script.
Wow.
It's just stamped with my name, five pages. And I learned my three lines and I got to Santa Fe and was in the makeup trailer getting my hair done the day before I started. And I didn't have my glasses on because I was, you know, they're doing my hair. I couldn't see. And in the trailer was a guy, and I'm just having fun talking to him, whoever this is. And I mean this, people are like, you didn't know. I'm like, no. And I got up, put my glasses on. It was Robert Downey Jr.
Wow.
And the next day I started work and I get summoned to the set and I walk on and Chris Nolan says, Robert had this idea that you should be standing next to him in the whole movie. Basically, if you're his lawyer, you should just go with him in all these places. And I'm like, what a great idea. That was it. So 5 pages turned into like 20 pages and learning new dialogue and adding things all day. So it was amazing. Cool process. And that whole process.
Do you think it had to do with that casual conversation in your trailer that you didn't know you were talking about?
I that's a great thing to think, but I think Chris Nolan, I don't think he would, it's a lot bigger than that. I think it was just the idea of what are you going to do with two people in all these scenes? It's a little better to have that third person away to, even if it's just that, right?
I think
more that. But I mean, it could have something to do with, if I'm going to be in this room, I want to be with this cool guy maybe that I just met or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So, and now Christopher Nolan has risen rightfully to this, to almost like a mythical status as a director because he's so excellent at it. I mean, his you know, he writes, he directs, his movies are incredibly creative and complicated. What was it like as an actor taking direction from somebody like that?
What he does is he only gives you direction if you're not doing what he wants you to do.
Right.
So it's not like he sits you down and says, here's what I want, now go do it. It's more, you feel like you're a part of it more because maybe you came up with something that he's not arguing. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So my the only thing that he would say is, Scott, I'm not giving you a close up on this scene because I'm not going to cut to it. And I'd say something stupidly funny like, you know, it's OK. Or, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, just saying it's fine, man, trying to make him feel good about it. But he really didn't. My job on that movie was being there for Robert Downey Jr. to look at, not even act with, just look at. I mean that. But just sometimes, just be the eyeballs that this guy who's trying to win an award or maybe not trying to win it. I never felt like he was trying to win an Academy Award.
Right.
Oh, that's cool.
Was he like, dude, stop looking at my forehead? who told you to do that? Why are you doing that?
Or he was going to go, did you work with Mickey Rooney?
Because you're looking at my forehead, and that's a trademark.
Yeah,
I know. That's awesome.
So that was it.
Yeah, it was so great. I mean, and listen, I think going into Oscars each year, you can kind of circle the people like, okay, this person's definitely going to win. And I felt that way the whole time about Robert Downey, not only because he was so excellent in this sort of prestigious blockbuster great movie, but also because I feel like his story of, you know, what he went through and how he came out on the other side and all he's done for Hollywood with Iron Man and the Marvel movies, which gave Hollywood billions and billions of dollars. I mean, did you feel like, oh, buddy, you're a lock?
Not at the time. And here's why. And this is a cool thing. And Robert would tell somebody this, too. He put that role, that performance into Chris Nolan's hands. So they would do five takes. And one take, Robert would scream, right? And then the next take, he would do it very soft. And it was just about what Chris was going to go into the editing room and figure out.
Right.
Nobody was aware at the time because it was up in the air of what this performance was going to be.
Wow.
I would do a take where I'm like, that was so over the top. Not that I've said that out loud.
Right.
But you just, I didn't watch the performance academy. I was like, he's really good.
Yeah.
But everybody was talking about Killian at the time, right? Everybody on the set's just like, let's do this little 1950s part of the movie and we'll get back to what Killian's doing, which is incredible.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know, not at the time, but
they took your red hair arrow out of the quiver by being in black and white too. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I loved it also because I hadn't shaved my beard in 30 years. Wow. My beard became, because without my beard, and if you see the movie Oppenheimer, I look exactly like my mother, and I'm not bragging on my mother.
Right.
A boy doesn't want to look like his mother, right? And I was so insecure about shaving my beard. It didn't look good. So the black and white helped me a little, I think.
Well, you fit right in to that crew, and the movie was fantastic. But let's go back a little bit, because another time that you have been able to work with absolute Hollywood legends was in Crimson Tide.
Oh my God.
And Crimson Tide was, I mean, it's a great movie. I feel like, you know, you have a series of great submarine movies over the years, you know, your Das Boots and even U-571 was really good, and Run Silent, Run Deep, and it all through Hollywood. It's such an, the submarines add an element of drama before you even start, because it's such a tense, literally pressure cooker situation. So do you remember anything about working with Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington in that movie? Because that movie, between the two of them, they were just such awesome actors at the top of their game.
I remember absolutely everything, because I had done, my whole career has been, I worked on this because I, except for Oppenheimer, which I auditioned for, it's like I did this because I worked with somebody else. You know, like Band of Brothers was because I'd done a pilot for somebody and the casting director remembered me. You know, it was everything. Right. And Crimson was the same. I had done a television commercial with Tony Scott. And he, you know, because these directors in between movies would go like, what, you want to, I'll do this cool commercial. And Tony Scott had directed it. And he offered me the Ricky Schroeder part in Crimson Tide. Do you remember
who
was in it?
Sure, yeah.
And Party of Five, a show I was doing at the time, wouldn't let me do it.
Wow.
So I didn't do it, and it was fine. And then I get a phone call at my apartment in Studio City about 3 weeks later, and it was Tony Scott on the phone. And he's like, hey, Grimes, I have like a week's worth or 2 weeks worth of work for you. I don't know what you're going to play yet. Can you just come in? And I'm like, you know what? Party of Five didn't write me in this episode. Fuck them. I'm going and doing it. And the problem is I show up the next day and they shave my head. They shave my head. And here's a funny story. And I'm sorry to say this. They also, starting that day, was Ryan Phillippe.
Yeah.
And they shave his head. And I'm sitting in my trailer. I shouldn't tell this, but I'll tell it.
Please.
I'm sitting in my trailer and I hear somebody crying. And I go outside, and sitting on the stoop is Ryan Phillippe, who, by the way, looks gorgeous. I look like a idiot with my head. And he's crying. He's crying because he says his girlfriend's going to break up with him if she sees this haircut.
Reese with
his head. I'll make him cry.
And I remember just comforting him, you know, just met him going, no, dude, you're patting him on the back. You're good looking, man.
Oh, please. Yeah. You're gonna get so many women pregnant. I promise.
So that day, I get called onto the set. Tony Scott used to, he's passed, but he directed with a big megaphone thingy, right?
Awesome.
And he would just, because we're on the submarine, it's on this gimbal. And the only scene that I'm in the entire movie was shot an hour after I got there. Right.
Wow.
And it's a scene, and the setting up the cameras, and Tony Scott yells out through the megaphone, Grimes, you're not going to get laid for a fucking year with that haircut.
Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. We do the scene, and I'm going to answer your question about Hackman.
Yeah.
We do my close up. I don't speak in it. If you remember the scene, he takes me kind of hostage.
Right.
He sticks a gun in my head and he says, I can't kill you, but I'll kill Officer Hilaire here, Petty Officer Hilaire. And, you know, we're doing, you know, 10, 11, 12 takes of me and whatever. And they turn the cameras around And I had a bruise on my forehead from Gene Hackman putting the gun. And Gene Hackman says to me, oh, I noticed you're getting a thing. The camera doesn't show the gun on his close-up. And he's like, I'm not going to press it in. I'm like, no, dude, this is your close-up. This is when you should press it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The coolest guy, he did not press the gun. He didn't touch my head.
Wow.
For his close-up. I was like, that is freaking cool.
That is cool.
I stayed. I got paid for 2 more weeks. I was never in another scene. I just worked every day without working. Just
wow.
Yep.
Wow.
That was it. I'm in one scene, the one thing, and it was awesome.
That's a dream. And that's a cool movie. Do you ever rewatch that one?
No.
I mean, because it really holds up. I happen to have seen that recently.
I should. I just don't. Movie. Yeah. I don't.
But you know, it's interesting because you sort of categorize yourself as like, well, I didn't become like the superstar of the Coreys or whatever. And yet we talked about Oppenheimer and then Crimson Tide. And also another one sort of lily pad in between those two was you got to work with Russell Crowe for a long time on that Robin Hood movie, which I thought was excellent and totally underrated. Like, I'm a sucker for Robin Hood movies. And I think the one that oddly is the most popular, the Kevin Costner one, is the worst one. Yeah. Like it's like if you watch it now, it's almost like the 90s threw up on screen a little bit. But this Russell Crowe one that you're in is a lot more gritty. And I forget, did Tony Scott direct that as well?
Ridley Scott.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
so, yeah, okay. You worked with both Scott brothers and Russell Crowe. What do you remember about working with the two of them?
Well, Russell and I were already great friends. We had done a movie in 1998 called Mystery Alaska.
Oh yeah, sure.
A hockey movie. Nobody saw it, but we stayed great friends. And again, the only reason I'm in Robin Hood, and I didn't love this because Ridley didn't get to pick the cast. Russell did. Russell wanted to work with his three best friends at the time, which were me, Alan Doyle, and Kevin Durand. He wanted us to be the Merry Men. So I felt that on set every day, and Ridley would probably agree because I took direction from Russell.
Oh, weird.
You know, and basically, he's like, Robin Hood's going to do this. You're going to be right behind me. So that was my job.
Right.
I loved making that movie with my friends, but I don't still to this day feel like I worked with Ridley Scott. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
Because look, I play a Welshman. My accent is not very good in that movie. I think Ridley would come in and I'd have this like something to say, and Ridley would so kindly be like, let's cut that speech and just and it would be end up to be one line. And I got it because Welsh is a tough thing to, you know, sell anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, it was so great. And it was great to be there with your buddies. But that was, I don't feel like I should have been in that movie if Ridley had anything to do with it. He would have
probably. Are you still friendly with Russell?
Very. Yeah, we did music together we still do kind of music together. We're in this, you know, band called Indoor Garden Party that it's just a bunch of middle-aged actors.
Right, I read about that. Does Cameron Crowe have something to do with that?
Nope.
Okay, I don't know why. In Wikipedia, it's leading me in all the directions. Because Indoor Garden Party, it said like Cameron Crowe created this band and Scott Grimes is the lead singer.
Oh, no, I think they mean Russell Crowe. They're probably just...
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe even I read it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be weird.
He just started. Yeah. It's just, you know, that's why we, the Merry Men, it's, you know, that's why we were in it because we were singers.
And so now, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but you're, how did you come into the Seth MacFarlane universe? Where do you remember first meeting him?
I do. And it's you're going to edit this. So if it's a long story, I promise I'll make it short.
No, please.
My friend Kim Furtman, the first girl I ever kissed behind a dumpster at 71st Street when I was like 11 years old.
Behind a dumpster.
I know, it's absolutely true.
She tells the same story.
Yep. And you had to look at her forehead.
Yeah.
She's short, guys. She's short.
She's lovely. And she's
the best.
Came out here.
We love her.
And got a job. I think with you guys, right? I think she was Seth's assistant.
Assistant.
And I hadn't met him yet, right? I was on a hockey team, right? Now, let's because I'm 52 now and I can tell the truth. I was on a roller hockey team.
But out here, right?
Yes.
I can tell the truth.
And me and my buddy Jacques were kind of called by Danny Masterson. Remember, you know Danny Masterson, who's
of
now
of course.
Yes.
I know nothing about him, had nothing to do with him, never met him, but please continue.
And Goldie, I loved your letter, but
I had going Sky.
It was a rebuttal more to the other letter that was written.
I had done Party of Five with Danny Masterson, and he wanted to start a roller hockey team. He got me on it with my buddy Jacques. We were like, cool, we're on a roller hockey team. This is fun. And it turns out the entire team were Scientologists. But I didn't find this out. Yeah, I didn't find this out until too late. And we're already in, you know, we're in the championships and whatever. But and over the course of months, they'd go like, Scott, you should give us a. I'm like, nah, I'm good. And they were.
It's a very funny sports movie, as you learn right before the championship that you're playing for Scientology.
They never pushed anything.
Right.
I've also found that to be true. In the defense of all of them that I've met, they've never once.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
They've never. All the people have subtle been and they universally cool.
Yeah.
To me.
But I get a call one day from the captain of the team, a guy named Jim, and he says, "Scott, I cheated on my wife, and I have to do this thing called restitution or whatever the word that they do when they do something wrong. Yeah. And I have to send her to a hotel for 2 weeks, a spa hotel, and I need to borrow $10,000." I said, no, Jim, I don't know you, dude. I can't do that. And he was like, okay, sorry, click. My phone rings 2 days later, and I answer it, and it's a guy. And he goes, hey, Mr. Grimes. I'm like, yes, this is Joe whatever from the Celebrity Center Scientology. We hear you're going to be paying Jim's bill for $10,000 of the thing. And I'm like, oh, no, you're mistaken. I'm not going to do that at all. I told Jim I can't. And the guy goes, nope, you are.
Oh, wow.
Cut to this guy is call. I keep hanging up on him. He calls me back and he's like, we know your children's name.
Oh, my
who will
God.
You live?
Well, we're I take it live. Back. I take it back.
we're going to put a lien on your house. And now I'm in my backyard screaming, you motherfucker. I'm going to find you. I'm screaming. Seth MacFarlane on the other line goes, I got you good, Scott, didn't I?
Wow.
Jim Furtman had told him the story of this
oh my God.
And Seth goes, get him on the fucking phone. And this whole, that's how I met Seth.
That is unbelievable. I'd never heard that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow. That's how I met him. And then we were just buddies. We were just friends. I mean, I think I went to karaoke. Most likely we had been to places, you know, me and you. And then American Dad, when Family Guy was going off, I think after the third season, he created American Dad and called me and said, will you come in and audition? And I was so scared that I burned him a CD. And at the time, man, that took a long time, right? Remember when burning a CD, it was like an 8-hour process?
Yes.
And I burned the CD with the only voice that I could come up with. And I had it messengered to him and he called me and he said, cool, thanks for the CD. You still have to fucking come in. And I went in and did the one voice. And if he had said, okay, give me what's another option, I wouldn't have done the show.
Right.
Wow.
I didn't have another option.
People
come
to
me all the time. They're like, you're a voiceover actor. I'm like, I am not. Not anywhere near how good those guys can do. And that just started. So that's that friendship was first.
Yeah.
Got me the thing. So
that's amazing. So here we are 20 years later on American Dad. Isn't that crazy?
Unbelievable.
Mean,
and my agents for the first 7 years were like, dude, stop it. You're never, this is never, every year they'd say, it's not getting picked up. It's not getting picked up. Look at us.
What do they know? What do they know? You want to shout out? You want to shout out those idiot agents?
I know. The guy that said it is still my manager.
He won't listen to this.
I'm too loyal.
Yeah.
Well, so, okay. American Dad. And then, so obviously you're buddies with Seth and now you're working with Seth on American Dad. And then Seth gets his dream really of putting together the Orville, because we all know Seth loves Star Trek and this is his homage to Star Trek, his love letter to Star Trek. And so does he approach you about, hey, do you want to do this as well? I mean, how did that go down?
It's a testament to who he is. And you know, we were standing outside smoking a cigarette at one of the Family Guy American Dad Christmas parties or something.
Right.
I'll never forget what he said to me. We're out at the table and he's like, hey, Scott, would you ever consider doing television again? And it was the strangest question because the only reason I wasn't doing television is nobody was hiring me. I didn't make a conscious choice.
Right. Yeah.
I think I made a joke like, I consider it, you know, for you. And I said, yeah, of course. He says, I'm coming on this idea for this space show and da 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 da. I never thought of it. About 6 months later, we're at another party. And, you know, I thought that he'd done it and cast it and whatever. And he said it again. He goes, this is looking like it's going to happen soon. I said, wow, thanks for still thinking of me. And I still had to go in and audition with him. But it was great because we put it on tape and then they showed the tape, which was before self-tapes or anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
Loved that. Because, again, I'm not the greatest auditioner live. I'm just not. And I'll tell you that right now. I've lost so many jobs because I get nervous.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why the self-tape for me has really changed it, because I can, you know, do it and feel good about it and send it in and be the actor I think I'm supposed to be.
Right.
So that's why I got Orville, because I went in, did a kind of chemistry read with Jay Lee.
Yeah.
Make sure that we could kind of riff on it with each other. And that was it. I remember he called me right after the audition, said, where are you? I said, I'm at Laurel Tavern having a drink. And he popped over and said, we're doing it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it really was. And that was fun.
So many great stories. And we skipped over a show that I absolutely loved and America loved, which was your long stint on ER. And I remember, you were someone that I tracked, you know, through the years. Like, every time I would see you, I like, there's Scott Grimes from Community Auditions. And you came into ER. And I feel like at first you were sort of like, there to be almost like a little lighter, a little funnier. But then as the seasons progressed, you became like, no, there were storylines around you. Yep. You know, there were romances, there were, you know, you were up in the front of the credits at, you know, towards the beginning. Like, what was it like being on ER?
That was awesome. I was supposed to do two episodes. They were supposed to fire me because I killed somebody. And, you know, watching a doctor show and he kills someone, usually that person won't last.
Right.
And I do. I kill the person, or, you know, I kill that person by accident, obviously, not on purpose. Sure. And as I'm taking my wardrobe off, they're like, I just read episode 6 and you're in it. I'm like, what? They brought me back to kill me in a helicopter crash.
Wow.
They ended up killing the guy that made way more money than me. The regulars, because he was making $250 an episode and I was nothing. I was top of show.
Who was it? Who died? Do you remember?
Paul McCrane.
Oh, yeah. Paul McCrane. Love him.
You remember he had the one arm that he got cut off with the helicopter. So
Dr. Romaro.
Yep, Romano.
Romano.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so they just kept me on and I kind of rode the show and then they made me a regular. So that's why I think they were surprised, you know, that character just could only go one way.
Right.
So he could only get better and because of how bad he was. But that was the most fun I've ever had on a show, man.
That's such a fun show. And it's on HBO Max now. Okay. And a couple of years ago, I did start, you know, rewatching it from the beginning. And it's amazing. It's kind of like Friends is a good comp for ER because they came out, I think, almost the same,
same year.
And both casts were very pretty. Like, you know, both casts said they had handsome and beautiful, but there was something about it too. There was an extra element. There was like the great drama on ER. Yeah. Again, you talk about a submarine movie having built-in drama. Hospital obviously has that as well.
Yeah.
So that's a cool part of
it. It was a machine, right? That show just worked. Everybody knew their jobs and it was just a pleasure to be on it. And again, like we all dream of being in the opening credits of any show, but that show, it was my first year as a regular, was the last year they did opening credits.
Wow.
Because you don't really have opening credits anymore like they used to, right? When you get to the camera and the and what a dream that was to be a part of that.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Lucky,
that's so great. Well, now, before we let you go, thank you so much again for being so generous with your time. I want to just talk a little bit about the TED show.
Yeah.
Because the TED series really is doing great on Peacock. I think I keep seeing it's their, you know, their number one original series of all time. And it lasted not just like, you know, its initial weekend. It was really kicking butt still. So that must have been a pretty freeing experience for you to get to play some of the people that you probably saw growing up.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And also, like, weirdly, as an actor, being so kind of on the, not the ground floor, because, you know, Goldie, I didn't write any of this, but I felt, you know, I was going to Seth's house and he was showing me auditions for people because I wasn't even going to be in it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh.
So I felt like comfortable immediately when he said, do you want to give this a go? And it's funny. It was a Zoom audition. And wow. I was so nervous that I pretended, here you go, guys. Same as this interview. I pretended like my computer broke.
Stop.
For the audition. And he's texting me going, bro, we're on. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. What's happening? So I said, you know what I'm going to do, Seth? He goes, what? I'm like, I'm going to take my daughter is at my house. She's going to tape me and I'll send it to you. He goes, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, we did it right on this computer I'm on right now. I had self-tape. A beer. Yeah. And I did a self tape and then got to the next level and had to do it live after that, but still felt like, is this, am I even close to what you're
were
thinking?
Were you like right. Harvey Weinstein in the courtroom? He's like, I can't even walk to do the audition.
Very similar to that.
Yeah, great comp. Yeah. Great comp for Scott.
Yeah.
Well, the show is hilarious.
Yeah.
You're so good.
Hilarious in it.
And the dramatic moments, you're great as well. I just want to give you the kudos for that.
Because
you really sell, like, I think the thing that makes people really like the show is the idea that this is actually a good guy and not just like a raging asshole.
Yeah, right. That was the tough thing, and I think it comes across. And I will,
it does.
Carter, Goldie, I'm going to give you a comment at the read-throughs when we were at the read-through, and you would come into these read-throughs and play other people, including the person you ended up playing, the teacher. You killed it. So I would leave these read-throughs going, I got to work harder. I got to get
that's very nice.
I swear to God, man, you were a great.
I'm the opposite of you. He gets it in the read through and then he can't actually do anything ever.
Yeah, not true. You were great in the show.
You were so good in the show.
No, you were both fantastic. And Scott, you know, thank you, first of all, for coming here today. We love talking to you.
Yeah.
And thank you for being just like, I think you can tell you've been a special part of my life for a very
so
long
sweet.
Time. So
that
this
really means a lot to me, man.
This feels like a full circle moment, you know, for me. So I really appreciate that. So
my mom still thinks Dave Maynard is alive. But
he's not very much dead.
Dead. Yeah.
Very much dead.
Thanks so much for doing this.
So thank you, Scott. You were awesome.
I appreciate you guys a lot. Love you all.
Oh, God. Scott Grimes, so fun to talk to.
And that was great.
I love hearing how nervous he is. It's like he didn't seem nervous. He was great. And well, he's had a great, great career. And congrats on Oppenheimer. And thank you for being with us, Scott.
Yeah, that was great.
But now it's time for a portion of the show that we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Just beautiful. All right. And this was my / listener friend Chris Long's category.
Yes.
We should shout out Chris Long.
Yes.
Very
thank you, Chris.
Smart, cool, funny guy we work with. Cool might be a stretch, but
no,
smart,
he's
funny.
Very cool.
No, he's cool. He's cool. And he sent in this category, which is Top 5 athlete nicknames. So here we go, and I'm cheating at number 5 because I had to. There were just too many where I had a tie at number 5.
Okay.
Number 5, my tie is between the round mound of rebound,
yes,
which is Charles Barkley. I love that. And Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval. I think those are both great, great nicknames, great weight nicknames. And also here, related the other way to weight, number 4, the Slim Reaper.
I like Kevin that one
Durant.
Too, Kevin Durant.
I love that one. Such a good one. And 3, I mean, this had to be on here. Magic Johnson.
Yeah, there's overlap.
Yeah,
overlap.
And by the way, he was someone who, when I was in my peak fandom, hated him, hated the Lakers. Obviously, like, I love Magic now.
Yeah.
So he's the greatest. Number 2, the bus. Jerome Bettis.
Oh.
The bus. Love that nickname. And number 1, this was just a great nickname again from a period when I was glued to sports. The microwave. Vinny Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
The microwave. It came off the Detroit Pistons bench. And obviously he was called the microwave because he heated up very quickly. Love
Boom.
That.
Yeah, that's
great category. All right.
Yes.
JC,
thank you, Chris, for doing
what
that.
Do
okay.
you got?
Okay, my number 5 is David Lee's not David Lee Roth. David Lee's nickname when he was on the Warriors was WCW, White Chris Webber. Because I love Chris Webber. I thought it was funny. He's proud of it. Number four, Daryl Dawkins, Chocolate Thunder.
Good one.
I think so good. Number three, Michael Air Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty easy, but yeah. I mean, I had the first, when his Air Jordans first came out, my parents got those for me.
Ooh, good parents. Special. Good job. Yes.
Number two, Magic Johnson.
Ooh, there you go.
Number one, Clyde the Glide. He was my favorite for a very long time.
That's a good one. Good one. Clyde the Bald.
Okay. I can say that. Number five, shocked Alec didn't have this, Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
I considered it. I considered it. I kind of threw out all the nicknames that were just kind of parts of the name themselves, but whatever.
And number four, interrelated, kind of inseparable, Thomas the Hitman Hearns.
Ooh, love that. So consider that
great
too.
Name. Number great three, name. Magic Johnson.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Number two, the Hick from French Lick.
Nice.
Larry Bird. And number one, I'm surprised no one else had this because he really was influential at the time. Sort of forgotten now. William the Refrigerator.
Yeah, Harry. he was almost made.
There was a year he was the most famous person in America. Yes.
True. Yeah, I honestly, between the fridge and the bus, I had to make a choice.
Yeah, you made the wrong choice. Yeah.
There aren't, it's subjective. All right, Goldie, what do we got next week?
The top five songs that you hate that you also love.
Aruba.
No, I just love that song.
I know. I love that you're doing songs though, Goldie. Okay, yeah. Top five songs that you hate but you also love.
Yes. Great.
That'll be fun.
That's great.
Next week. And
it could really be top five songs you love that you also hate.
Right.
That's true.
Depending on your mood.
Like you're so sick of them.
Oh.
But you theoretically love them.
They do. That does mean something different. You're right.
I also quickly want to shout out how happy we were to finally have Tom Gamble back.
Yes.
Boy, he is dangerously funny.
I know.
Love Tom.
Yes.
I wish he would
Welcome
come
back.
On every
He's
week.
Be back.
Yeah, it was good to have him back.
And next week.
Next week. Oh, yeah. We got the Ricker. Dan Ricker will be on next week. He's the head writer over at Jimmy Kimmel. And
yes,
you
Danny
know,
Ricker.
That's topical. Coming off the Oscars, we'll get to hear all about that and him working with Jimmy. Goldie, I believe that's a you get. So thank you for doing that.
Yes.
You believe? Yeah, you didn't get him.
Well, maybe JC did. I don't know. I was just told by JC this morning.
No, it's not in the music world. It's not her world. Of course it was my get.
Fine.
I met him during the strike. We were walking around Disney all the time.
He's cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what do we think, gang? Are we doing High Note this week or not?
I don't have one.
And let's
don't know. That's enough for me. Yeah. Okay, what a fun show. Scott Grimes, Tom Gamble, Goldie and JC packed
Alec.
With entertainment. I loved it. Thank you all for listening. Thank you two in particular for being awesome.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.
I don't know. That was a pretty great last show.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Don't let this gray beard fool you.
Oh!